Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
You have Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm, both restricted free agents from Carolina, being sent to Calgary. And in return, they get Dougie Hamilton, Michael Ferlin, and Adam Fox, a highly regarded defensive prospect from the Flames. That's a major trade and certainly something we've been waiting for all weekend.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. With me in the booth, as always, Sportsnet's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
Smell of summer is in the air, Ryan. The draft's behind us. The John Tavares sweepstakes are in full swing here. And then after July 1, July 2, everybody's going to be on the golf course.
Yeah, I was just thinking yesterday, I don't know if it's an amazing assignment or an awful assignment for the guys like our own Arash Madani who are in the parking lot of the CAA offices. They're trying to ambush people, but no one really thinks that anyone's going to talk. So you kind of, you time them when they go in. The Leafs went in 2 hours ago. They came out. You shout a question across the parking lot. They go, we can't talk now. And then you go back to enjoying the California sun, or at least that's how I envision things going on. Yes, it is a zany time of year where certainly a free agent to be potentially unlike any other in John Tavares getting wooed, but there are all kinds of shoulder rubs and foot massages going on right now as teams try to make their pitch to teams. We are going to be all over the free agency stuff as it unfolds. But yes, the draft having just concluded a few days back in Dallas, we are going to bring on Sportsnet's Sam Cosentino to break down how that shook down. And of course, maybe the headline of the draft in some ways, certainly from a Canadian perspective, I would say the big trade between Calgary and Carolina, the Flames sending stud right shot defenseman Dougie Hamilton, himself a draft day acquisition just 3 years ago. Dougie Hamilton heading out with youngster Adam Fox, as well as Michael Ferland, east to Carolina, coming back to RFAs, Elias Lindholm, and Noah Hanifin, a young defenseman. To break this down, we are pleased to be joined by Sportsnet's and the Calgary Sun's Eric Francis. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And you guys?
We are doing really well. Rory's really passionate about this trade, so I'm going to hand it over to him now. He's going to give you a condensed version of the two-minute rant that we just heard here in the studio.
All right, Eric, I want to ask you to convince me why this trade was the one the Flames had to make, why it's a good one for them, because the way I look at this team is they're definitely built with the idea that they should be making runs at the Stanley Cup here in the next couple of years. You know, the way the defense is, a couple guys signed for at least two more years. They've got some of their big guys signed long-term up front. And I look at this trade and I see, okay, on ice, Dougie Hamilton made up one half of the NHL's best defense pairing by the numbers and everything last year. Michael Ferland is what he is, a 20-goal scorer on that top line. Now, to me, I love Noah Hanifin. I see his upside being kind of what Dougie Hamilton is. I don't think he's there yet, though. Elias Lindholm, I imagine, is going to slide in on that top line and be hopefully an upgrade on Ferland. But he, too, has been a little bit of a disappointment as a number five. And I look at this trade and I see it as maybe in the long term it works out better for the Flames. Is it going to work out better for them now? And I know there are, you know, suggestions that, you know, maybe Dougie Hamilton just didn't fit in with this team, but I keep coming back to, man, when he was on the ice, he was really, really good for this team. And I don't know if this is going to be an upgrade to Hanifin. So I'm having trouble looking at this trade as a big win for the Flames in their efforts to win now. Can you convince me why this was the move that they had to make?
Well, I'd be happy to explain
yes.
it to you.
That's why we have you here.
Exactly. This was a trade of necessity for the Calgary Flames. They went into the offseason with two main shopping list items to tackle, and they conquered them both with one trade. One was to effect change in that locker room. There was too much apathy, too many guys in that room who were okay with losing, and the poster boy for that was Dougie Hamilton. He's a different guy. He's a lone wolf. There's a million different ways to describe Dougie Hamilton. But at the end of the day, he no longer wanted to be in the environment that the Calgary Flames wanted him to be in. So he was very unhappy that they waived his brother. Things that shouldn't really bother you too much because they're not really that important in the grand scheme of things. But at the end of the day, Dougie Hamilton had to go. There was no doubt of that in the minds of management and several teammates. So you did that. Obviously, he's a great player on the ice. He's got all the tools that you could possibly ask for in a defenseman, including being a right shot, and led the league in goals this year amongst defensemen. However, there's a reason he's been traded now twice in the last 3 years, twice under the age of 25, despite having everything you could possibly want in a defenseman. And so I kind of outlined that, and I don't want to besmirch his name too much, but suffice it to say, he needed to go. So you do that, and you get back in return Noah Hanifin, who has the exact same number of points in his first 3 years as Dougie Hamilton had in his first 3 years. And I dare say is a better skater than Dougie Hamilton. Maybe not as big, but probably more physical. Anyway, comparing him one-on-one is tough because Dougie Hamilton is an elite defenseman and Noah Hanifin is maybe on his way. Adam Fox, let's just address that right now, The Harvard defenseman, there was no chance he was ever coming to Calgary. As a matter of fact, I'll add that there's no chance he's ever going to Carolina. So this was a throw-in at the end of the day. This is a New York kid who wants to play for the Rangers or the Islanders, and in conversations with his agent between the team, it was pretty evident that this was never going to happen. So if you could salvage something for him, you throw him into this sort of deal. I will say that I bet you Adam Fox will be the best player in this entire trade as we look back on it 5 years from now. He's that good, in my opinion. And then, you know, Lindholm for Michael Ferland, that's the one that the organization didn't want to do. They did not want to trade Michael Ferland, but I would venture to guess that Lindholm will be a little more consistent than Michael Ferland, and I know the knock on Lindholm is his consistency, but, you know, similar amount of points the two had. Ferland disappeared for the last, I think, 23 games of the year. He didn't get a single goal this year when they needed him most. That was so frustrating for this team that he was so inconsistent. He's a real upgrade for Carolina right now because of his physicality and size, all the things he brings. But he's also 1 year away from unrestricted free agent status, and there's no way the Calgary Flames, knowing what they know about this kid, is that they were going to pay $4 or $5 million on the open market for Michael Ferland next year. So you were going to lose him anyway. You were going to lose Adam Fox. And in a way, you'd already lost Dougie Hamilton. So in return, you get two guys that are very serviceable. One is already penciled into the top line alongside Gaudreau and Monahan. And Hanifin is kind of a jack of all trades. So sorry, that's a very long-winded response to your questions, concerns, theories. But to me, I just think on the surface, I get that people had sticker shock and thought, oh my God, we gave it the best player in the deal. And maybe the two best players long-term in Adam Fox. But I think short-term and long-term, this is the best thing for the Calgary Flames. They also save money. They got faster, younger, and cheaper. That's a pretty good trio to have.
So we would assume then that probably TJ Brody and Mark Giordano get reunited. Perhaps Hanifin then slides in on the left side beside Hamonic. You mentioned we're talking about Lindholm going up to that top line on right wing, but I'm curious. I mean, a guy who's played a lot of center, it's a very valued position, as we just saw the 2018 draft. Do you think there's a chance that maybe he ends up being the third line center in a world where we now talk more about top nine? Do you see him going down the middle to kind of strengthen Calgary all the way through the lineup?
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Jankowski is their number three right now up the middle, and he's a guy who I think he had a pretty good season for a rookie. I think what he had 17 goals. But, you know, up the middle and at the blue line is where this team wants to build more than anything else, and that's kind of what they're working on. Bill Peters has already talked about how he played Lindholm for the final 23 games of the season up the middle, finished the season number 20 in the league in faceoff percentage, which is something the Calgary Flames really need to work on. So he's valuable in a lot of different ways, and even if they put him on that top line with Monahan and Gaudreau, they're going to use him as a centerman on his strong side in the offensive zone. So versatility is a big part of this. The general manager, Brad Treliving, said, I wouldn't pencil him in on the top line quite yet because we're not quite yet done with what we're going to do in the offseason. This team has $24 million in cap space right now. Now, they have to sign Hanifin and a handful of other RFAs. That'll probably eat up about $13 million, but they've got a considerable amount of money to go out and get a right winger. Unfortunately, there aren't many great right wingers that are out there as UFAs, but I would be surprised if Michael Grabner wasn't the guy who they target as the one they want to bring into Calgary. Another guy I hear a lot of, his name is Derek Ryan, played for Carolina last year. Bill Peters absolutely loves him. He's 31 years of age. I don't think it's going to cost a lot, and he's a centerman, a right-handed centerman. I think the Calgary Flames are going to target him as well as an unrestricted free agent. So, yes, Lindholm will be moved around. It gives them options. If he doesn't fit on that top line, he's very serviceable in other ways.
You touched on the need for that another score on the second line there. If they can't get one of the guys that they want to target, or it becomes too expensive or something like that, is this a team that might, again, dip into the trade market? I mean, is it inconceivable that they would trade their first rounder again next year? Is that kind of off limits considering they just missed the playoffs? Or, you know, what kind of things might they move if they have to go down that road, or would they probably just avoid that altogether, the trade market?
I mean, I think Brad Treliving, what, that's four drafts in a row where he's been, you know, basically the biggest, you know, Trader Joe out there. He's got quite a reputation now of being a riverboat gambler, you know, ready to roll the dice. So I don't think you can ever count out the possibility of another trade. Sam Bennett would be a name that several teams has probably kicked tires on. He hasn't had very good numbers his first 4 years, so you don't get a lot back for him, but maybe a change of scenery for him and another guy are worth it. Oh, my God, trading another first-round draft pick, I don't see that happening anytime soon. He's just because, I mean, I was going to say he's taking a beating, but who cares what people think about him, and I know he doesn't care. I just think that going into the draft this year and not having a guy in the first three rounds, it's almost demoralizing for your organization as well, and not a good idea moving forward, because we all know you build from the draft. So I don't think the appetite is there to trade any of their top, you know, picks next year, but I do think that they would consider Sam Bennett. I think they would consider trading Michael Stone, who's their fifth defenseman. I think there are some other guys on the roster they would consider trading, but I think the significant trade has obviously already been done.
All right, Eric, we know you've got way more important people to talk to on the phone than us during this week, so we'll let you get back to it. Thanks so much for taking some time today.
Thank you. Yeah, when you say more important people, you mean like the starter at the golf course?
Absolutely.
Okay, boys, thanks.
All right, thanks, Eric. That is Eric Francis of Sportsnet, of the Calgary Sun, of the 15th hole. Hey, you can take phone calls on the golf course. You can still get nine in and be doing your job as long as you got that cell phone in your pocket. Working the sources, as I'm sure Eric is doing all week. Yeah, he mentioned it. Calgary been a fascinating team to watch the past couple of years. Rory, you're right. There's all kinds of parallels between the trade of Hamilton and the trade we saw 2 years ago with PK Subban to Weber. Mm-hmm. It's really a two-part question in my mind. Number one is, what is going on with this guy in our room? So let's say you settle that with people don't like him. Let's just say that's the case. Mm-hmm. After that, I think you still have to ask yourself, if you're a GM, is that enough of a reason to trade him, right? Like, you're still balancing, okay, so maybe he's not Johnny popular in the room, doesn't blend perfectly for whatever reason. Can you then still justify trading a guy like Subban, who was, I don't know, probably 26 or so at the time, mm-hmm. right shot, amazing defenseman, Dougie Hamilton. I mean, the guy hasn't even turned 25. I think the point is, you better be damn sure if you're doing it that this is something you've got to do.
Yeah, with Subban trade, they're almost opposite. With the Subban trade, right away, it's not a huge downgrade or anything like that for the Habs. It's more towards the back end of that deal when, you know, Weber is getting to his late 30s at the end of that contract. He's not going to be the player that Subban probably is still going to be at that point in his career. Whereas this trade, the back half is where it better be paying off for the Calgary Flames. Now, what I find curious about this is, if, you know, Dougie Hamilton is okay with losing, or he's whatever it is, it just didn't fit in that locker room anymore. Well, now he's going to a Carolina team that has a new owner, a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 9 years. They want to change the culture. They want more winning. They don't want that. So why would this be a guy that they would want to target? Well, it's because he's awesome when he's on the ice. He's very productive. And like I said, that defense pairing at the top was one of, if not the best by the numbers, by Corsi and shot chances and all that stuff last year, and has been for a couple of years. So I think Carolina on the ice is getting a huge upgrade there. And I'm a big fan of Noah Hanifin. Like, I thought at that draft that the Leafs maybe should have taken him over Mitch Marner. Right now, Mitch Marner is probably the better player, but I think 7 years from now, Noah Hanifin might be a really elite defenseman in the NHL. So how is that going to pay off? It's just curious to me that Dougie Hamilton has been traded. There is obviously something going on there, but when it comes down to it, you win and lose games on the ice, and there's no doubting that he has been a value add, a big plus for any team that he's ever played for. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in Carolina as they change their culture, and if this moves them into any other trades. Like, there's been suggestion that this pushes Justin Falk maybe towards the edge in moving him out, and that's a guy coming off of a down year, but who has been fantastic throughout his career and a really underrated producer in the NHL. So it's an odd one for me, but on the surface, I look at this and I see Carolina coming out as big winners. If there is any world where they can land Adam Fox and sign him, if there's any chance of that, then, I mean, that might be the X factor in this trade that really puts it over the top in Carolina's favor.
You win and lose games based on what guys do on the ice. You win and lose championships, largely, based on what you do at the draft. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to speak to Sportsnet's Sam Cosentino, going to break down everything that happened in Dallas at the NHL draft, focus in on the Canadian teams and some of the volatility we saw. Things didn't go exactly as we expected at the top of the draft, and that certainly had an impact on how things shook out. Sam Cosentino on the other side of the break on Tape to Tape. Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, he is Sportsnet's junior hockey guru, Sam Cosentino. Sam, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. Really excited to start the summer, but also still getting off the adrenaline of the weekend's events.
Yeah, absolutely. Memorial Cup in late May, the draft here in June. This is the Cosentino season, no doubt about it. Sam, heading into this draft, we were talking about the wingers and the defensemen. Lo and behold, two centers end up going in the top five picks. No defenseman goes until number seven. That volatility upended a lot of mock drafts. What did you make of how the early part of the 2018 draft went down and the ramifications, the sort of trickle-down effect it had on the rest of the first round?
Well, a couple of things first. I mean, I think it tells you how much people value centers, because if you try and get them on the free agent market, you usually overpay in terms of average annual salary or in terms of the length of the contract. The other part is you're overpaying when you have to acquire those players via trade. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I don't think there was a lot separating the top 10, 11 players. You know, I predicted that most teams would have most of the same names, 1 through 12, just in a varying order outside Dahlin and Svechnikov. And that's kind of what happened. So I think there was one little surprise in there with Kravtsov in terms of 9, but 11 of the other 12, I think most everyone had them on their lists, just in differing order. So getting back to the ramifications of that, you know, Kotkaniemi at 3, Barrett Hayton at number 5, that allowed Detroit to sit there and very, very happily select Philip Zadina, when I think they had their eyes set on picking up a defenseman there. But when Zadina was there at 6, I don't think they really had a choice. And then Vancouver got its run of the mill with whatever defenseman they wanted and obviously chose to go with Quinton Hughes, and then things started to shake down after that. But I think there were a lot of teams that were really happy in the first 10 or 12 picks based on the fact that Kotkaniemi and Hayton both allowed players to be available to teams that they didn't think were going to be there.
I want to ask you about the first center to go, Jesperi Kotkaniemi here. And look, when you draft in the first round, you want to be getting a player who's going to be in the NHL. And certainly when you're picking in the top three, you want, you know, a high-end key contributor going to the future. And it's not a surprise, really, that the Habs went with Kotkaniemi at 3. But how much of a general risk around this player is there at number 3, considering probably before the under-18s, he was more of a mid-first-round pick, although he was rising at that point, and the fact that he, correct me if I'm wrong in this, didn't play center in the Finnish league this year, does internationally, but didn't play center in the Finnish league. How much risk is there behind taking Kotkaniemi at 3?
I think there's a bunch of risk, and it's more associated for me with the job span of Mark Bergevin than anything. I think he's a good pick. I think he will play center and projects that way at the National Hockey League. In the men's league, just a little bit too young, playing for his dad, who's the coach. So his dad kind of knows best in terms of on and off ice and figured, hey, you know what, he's going to be better served at the wing. And when you look at his ability to snipe from the wing, was pretty impressive when you go over some of his highlight packs. So getting back to where Mark Bergevin stands, I mean, I have to think the clock is ticking on this guy. Mm-hmm. We've seen repeatedly that he's had issues addressing the center ice area, you know, whether it was Galchenyuk moved in and out of there a bunch, whether it was the acquisition of Drouin and him moving out a whole bunch. You know, they just haven't had real good strength at that position at the top of their lineup. Mark Bergevin selects the guy, his clock runs out, and Kotkaniemi ends up playing center for the next general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Now, as we have seen in the game the last couple of years, things can change quickly. I mean, look where Ottawa was 2 years ago at the end of the year, and look where they were just about July 1st of 2018. In a world full of disarray, you know, where's Carlson? Hoffman's been traded, the off-ice stuff that's gone on. The situation for Montreal is almost similar. A couple of years ago in the playoffs, looking really good. Then this year, just all kinds of issues getting things organized in terms of Carey Price's health, Galchenyuk and his on and off ice performance, and the list goes on. So in terms of the general feeling for me, if I were Mark Bergevin and I was thinking long term, I probably would have selected a defenseman, but I have no problem with selecting the center ice position. But in terms of addressing an immediate need, which I thought he should have done based on his own lifespan in the job, then I probably would have took either Zadina or Tkachuk, because I think both of those guys can play right away in the National Hockey League. So that's where I think some of the challenges and some of the risk are. You take a guy that you really like, and I give you props for doing that and stepping up on him and doing it there, but is it going to be you as the general manager when he comes to play for you in the NHL?
You mentioned Quinn Hughes at number 7 for Vancouver, the first D-man taken. Edmonton gets Evan Bouchard at number 10. I mean, with the Oilers, we had heard they were looking to move that pick for immediate roster help, and then as things shook down, they were perhaps looking to trade up to get Bouchard and realize, you know what, he's probably going to fall to us. Do you get the sense those two teams were just tap dancing up to the stage to take those guys?
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, Vancouver's in a situation where that's an element that they really haven't had on the back end, you know, as far back as I can remember. That's what Quinn Hughes brings. And being a late birthday with his audition playing for their Team USA at the Worlds, I think gives them an opportunity to step in and maybe even play right away. And that comes with a whole bunch of different things, being at the University of Michigan, just having completed his freshman year. You know, there's a variety of things that go along with that. And so they had their pick of the litter. And if you're Vancouver, you're saying, all right, all the best defensemen are there, except for Rasmus Dahlin. Who do we really like? And I think that's an element that they coveted simply because they haven't really had it on their team. And when I go back and think about Travis Green and where he was with Portland, at that time, although things are obviously different today, you know, they had a back end that included Derek Pouliot and Joe Morrow. And, you know, they had some really good high-end offensive guys at the junior level. And you can see what that can do to your team. Ultimately, you look at Vancouver's forward group and you think, wow, this is a pretty good up-and-coming group, whether it's Dahlin or Pettersson or Horvat or Brock Besser. The line moves on. How do you get the best out of those guys? Well, you find defensemen who can get pucks in their hands, and you find defensemen who can run the power play, and Quinton Hughes answers all of those questions. Now, there may be some deficiencies in terms of his defensive game, but I think he proved in his short stint there at the Worlds that it's not maybe as deficient as most people think. Now, getting to Evan Bouchard, I think the Edmonton Oilers were indeed just floating the pick around. I don't think they were serious about moving it because they felt very confidently that they were going to get one of two things there, a defenseman or a center iceman. So, of course, the center iceman had left that, left the defenseman there, and now they had the opportunity to pick either Bouchard or Dobson, and they felt like Bouchard was the better choice for where they are. And I truly believe that there are two reasons for this. First of all, they're almost the same player, but Evan Bouchard's a late birthday, so he's played that extra year of junior, and I believe he's going to be a lot like Kyler Yamamoto. He's going to be given an opportunity to start with the big club right out of camp and let him determine his fate in the lineup the rest of the way through. I don't know if Dobson's quite ready for that yet, although he was my next best defenseman on the draft board after Dahlin, but I don't think he's ready to play right away, and I think Evan Bouchard is. So the Oilers in general had Ethan Bear as their best defensive prospect. He played NHL games last year. Then the pipeline drops off significantly at that position. So the Oilers are saying, all right, we're going to address two things here. The guy that we coveted, the player that we coveted in potentially moving the pick in a right shot defenseman who can help you in the power play. And if that doesn't work out, our fallback position is we're stocking our cupboard with a high, high-end defenseman. So for Edmonton, it was the absolute perfect pick in the situation they were in, knowing that this guy has an opportunity to step in right away and maybe be able to play for it. I do believe he gets NHL games, and then again, Evan Bouchard will determine his fate the rest of the way with his play.
So Ottawa nabs Brady Tkachuk at fourth overall, opting to keep the pick as opposed to giving it to Colorado and keeping its 2019. Maybe we can talk about whether there's regret someday with not taking a D there or Zadina. But I think we are all in agreement that Brady Tkachuk is a really nice player and he could play pretty soon. So no first rounder for Winnipeg. Calgary didn't pick to the fourth round. If you're looking at the Canadian teams after the first round, does anyone stand out? Any names come to mind as nice grabs? And maybe I'll narrow it to start to the Canadians because they had 10 picks after the first round.
And I agree with you. So when we get to the Montreal Canadiens, Jesse Ylönen was a guy who was the son of Juha, who many people had inside their first round. So they nabbed him in the second. They really liked that pick. And then we moved down, and Olofsson was another guy who I think really dropped. There were a lot of draft boards that had him in the first round, and there are some that had him, you know, just past 25. Having said that, you know, there was a big range there, and I would extend that range for Olofsson. I would have thought might have extended to maybe 40 or 45, but he was taken even later than that. So you have to think that there's some value there as well. Cameron Hillis is another guy who's a smaller player, but with his engine, his work ethic, and his smarts, he's got an opportunity to play. So a nice pick there in the third round. And then I go down the list with some of the guys that I know well. Alan McShane, steady two-way guy, you know, nice value pick in the fourth round there. And the guy that I like a lot is Cole Fonseth. I think people, because of his size and because he plays center, might have turned a blind eye towards him. But he's a really good playmaker. And, you know, going into our prospects game, of all the draft eligibles that weren't late birthday, I believe he was the top scorer at that time, playing for the Prince Albert Raiders. Had really good experience down the stretch, basically playing playoff hockey for the final month and a half of the season, as Prince Albert went on a wild run there, winning, I don't know, maybe 11 of 12 down the stretch to actually get in to the playoffs. And I think that experience is really going to help him. Samuel Hood is just kind of a steady, again, drafting the center ice position. When you look at Montreal altogether, center and D were definitely the calling card for the day. Ylönen, a winger. Gorniak, who I don't know much about, also a winger. But the rest of them, all center and defensive. So that tells you where not only the organizational need lies for Montreal, but how much they've lacked in those positions over the last couple of years.
Who are your general winners and why in the draft, maybe specifically the first round? I mean, the Islanders have been given a lot of press for their two picks in a row. I mean, Bouchard falling to the Oilers, you talked a bit on that, and the Red Wings getting Zadina, having him fall into their laps, and then still being able to get Jovellino, number 30 overall, an exceptional player, the first player exceptional status into the QMJHL. Who are some of your general winners coming out of the draft, and why?
I think first would be Detroit for me. And it's not just necessarily the first round, but Jonathan Bergeron is a guy that I had going in the first, that a lot of people had going in the first, was taken with the second pick in that second round. So essentially, to me, he becomes a first rounder. When I go back and look at that haul, Zadina, Valeno, Bergeron, to me, all three first rounders. And when it comes to Valeno and Bergeron, both guys who fell well below what their initial slot value was. I guess you could say the same thing about Zadina, but if you're Zadina, you were already projected at 3 or 4, so moving down to 6 wasn't necessarily a huge drop for him. So I think Detroit really scored there. And a couple of other guys I like, you know, Jared McIsaac, guys, if we go back to the midterm rankings, I think everyone would have comfortably had him inside the top 20. You know, I worry a little bit about his ability to process the game, but he skates, and that always plays these days. And then Alec Regula is another guy. First year in London last year, I think adjusting to the league and the schedule and that sort of thing, but a big kind of steady defenseman who plays for the London Knights, and they're a factory of producing players. So I really like Detroit. Now let's go to the Islanders. Now, I'm always going to be biased in this regard because of my like for Evan Bouchard, because of how I project Noah Dobson. And when I look at where the Islanders were getting, Wahlstrom as a sniper, again, falling outside of 10 when most people had him very comfortably inside 10, including myself. And Noah Dobson, you know, to reiterate, I think when we look back at this thing, you know, 5-10 years from now, I think he'll be the second best defenseman selected out of this group. I just love his upside, right shot, big guy, really skates well. And I know the one issue in talking to some scouts that came up that I really didn't process in all of my viewings, or basically they were saying his ability to make the short play really quickly. So that 5-foot pass, processing it and making that play quickly. Everyone saw his laser passes, stretch passes up the middle of the ice, you know, bank passes off the boards, and the ability to skate the puck up himself. But the way the game's played, you know, you think about that little play that's just off behind the net, in that net side area off the either post. How many times do we see that little 5 foot pass? It's an outlet to the front of the net where the centers come back to help out support defensively, or your other defenseman is there. Those little plays are really important in the game. Now, there were some teams questioning Noah Dobson's ability to process and make those plays quickly, but I think he's so smart he adjusts anyways. And so I think the Islanders would be, after Detroit, probably the team that I felt really made some headway, especially with their two first rounders back to back.
Give us a little bit of a preview of next year's draft. At the very, very top, I think the projected number one right now is Jack Hughes, the brother of Quinn Hughes, who went this year. Give us a little preview on what he's about and maybe anybody else who might challenge him, if there is somebody else to challenge him for number one.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see any challengers, guys. I don't believe that. But I think Jack Hughes, and he has been compared even for the last couple of years now with some Connor McDavid-type qualities to his game. And I think as an underage player, when you step into the world under-18s and you're playing with, you know, Joel Farabee and you're playing with Oliver Wahlstrom, and you as an underage player are making both of those players better, that pretty much tells me everything I need to know. Now, what we saw this year in terms of the general scheme of things for the 2019 draft is a real strong group coming out of the Western Hockey League. That was not the case this year. In fact, they were close to having just one player if it wasn't for Washington taking Alexiev with the last pick of round one. But that's going to change. I think their 0-1 group is dynamite. Nolan Meier is a goaltender for Saskatoon and won't be a first-rounder, but he had an unbelievable season, and he was starting to raise a lot of eyebrows towards the middle of the season onward. Then I think about guys like Matthew Robertson, who plays in Edmonton, Bowen Byron, who I really like as an underschool, old-sized defenseman, plays with Vancouver, Dylan Cousins in Lethbridge, Kirby Dach in Saskatoon, Peyton Krebs, who plays out in the Western League for the Kootenai Ice. And then I think about guys like Michael Vukojevic, who's playing in Kitchener. I think he's going to be a top 10. He was dynamite since signing with the Rangers. And boy, oh boy, you're going to hear that name a lot as a high, high riser, although he probably is not getting the credit right now that he deserves. Raphael Lavoie out in Halifax. It's a really good class coming out of the CHL for sure. In terms of where some of the European players are at, not quite up to speed on that yet, but I hope some viewings at the Ivan Hlinka will help bring me up to speed there. So we're looking at an awesome group coming out of the CHL, in particular the WHL, which has a very, very good 0-1 core.
All right, Sam, well, soon enough it'll be time to turn our attention full-time to the 2019 prospects, but for now, please go get some rest and get beside a pool or something.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Rory, for having me on, guys.
All right, that is Sportsnet's Sam Cosentino, our draft guru. His mock draft, along with a bunch of others, as noted, turned a little upside down by the way things went early in the first round. Let me ask you, Rory, put on your scout or manager hat. Don't you think one of the hardest things to do is walking that line between best player available and maybe factoring a little bit of position need, but also the idea of just going and getting your guy, i.e., you know, I look at the Coyotes at number five and, you know, there's some wonderful, wonderful players available at that spot. And the consensus is on probably every other list that there's someone else you should be taking besides Barrett Hayton. He may have otherwise not gone to 11 and 12, but you can see the logic as well of saying, you know what, this is what we need. We like this guy just because a lot of other lists have him 10 more picks down the road. Let's jump up and nab him. The Canadians are getting lit up in some corners for taking Alexander Romanov in the second round when, you know, the idea is they probably could have got him in the fourth round.
Right.
But at the same time, it only takes one team to say, hey, we like that guy. And especially after the first round, I mean, think about it this way. We always laud teams that find Pavel Datsyuk in the seventh round or sixth round, and then you go to that team and say, God, you guys are geniuses for finding that guy. And they say, yeah, if we were so smart, why didn't we take him in the second round, right? Like, that's maybe what's going on in some of these instances. But that's got to be hard, right, to sit there and say, well, we know consensus is this guy should go further, but we either really like him or we need that position, and we think there's some sort of intersection where it makes sense to just jump up and take them now.
To me, drafting for position and only for position is a very, very dangerous game to play because on, you know, A, you're going to be passing up possibly more skilled players who are going to have the overall better career. And then the other thing is, if you're not picking in the top one, two, and maybe three, you know, the chances that this guy is going to step right into this lineup where that need is standing out is slim. He's like, Barrett Hayton is probably not going to step into the NHL next year, maybe not in 2 years. The interesting thing with him specifically is that playing for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, he's really buried on that depth chart behind a really stacked team that should have was favored to win the OHL this year. So he hasn't got the same exposure, the same minutes, the same opportunities that a lot of these other guys have. So the Coyotes must have seen something in the limited viewings that they have seen him that make them think that he can become a top. You have to think that picking that high, he's going to be a top two line center at some point in the future. To like him over Zadina, I can't believe that they are picking only for position. I think when you do select a guy, say you have a need at center, so you pick a center, you're picking him either because you like him more than everybody else, or you like him just as much as the winger or the defenseman who's also available there. And then the tiebreaker is, okay, well, we need to pick for a position now. Because like I said, like it's going to take time. Maybe you don't have the same need for that position 3 years down the line. Now you have more of a need for a defenseman or a winger. And if you've passed that guy up just because you picked for position, you are going to regret it. Now, as you get later on into the draft, you know, you get into the fourth, fifth, sixth round, the chances of any of those guys hitting in the NHL become less and less and less and less. So maybe at that point you can like, okay, we are taking a bit of a shot in the dark. We like this guy's skill set and maybe it's going to take him some time. And he does play center, which is a need. It's always a need, which you can get for a value at the NHL draft. You're never paying up really for a fourth round pick who plays center. So this is your opportunity to kind of stockpile these guys. You know, a team like the Carolina Hurricanes has really loaded up on defensemen over the last number of years, and now they're in a spot where they can use some of these guys, and did over the weekend by trading Noah Hanifin, use some of these guys as trade value, because now you have the upper hand on some of these teams who have the need now for defensemen and centers, and that's when you can kind of cash in on those guys.
Well, we'll see who else in the NHL may soon be traded, possibly from Carolina. We are just wading into this big week, recording this on Tuesday. Free agency is just about 5 days off. We expect tons of movement before July 1, tons on the day itself. We will, of course, be back in the booth shortly after July 1. We'll let the dust settle a little bit, pick apart everything that's gone on, all the faces in new places. It is always a super fun time of the year. You kind of don't want to close Twitter for more than 10 seconds at a time. Don't forget, you can always follow Rory on Twitter at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports. Check out the Tape to Tape podcast along with a host of other awesome podcasts on Sportsnet.ca. Subscribe in iTunes and check back next time for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.